Hi, welcome to Book Talk. I'm Sasha DeBoyle, and today we're going to be talking about two-time Carnegie Medal Award-winning author Patrick Ness and his most recent book for young adults, More Than This. More Than This starts with an incredibly enigmatic opening chapter. Within the first 10 pages, our protagonist, Seth, dies. He wakes up in a world that appears totally deserted in a house he hasn't seen for years, and the mystery lies in what happens next. Here to unpack More Than This with me today are children's bookseller Eve Harvey and young adult author Keith Gray. So I found the initial setup of the book totally compelling. What did you guys make of the first chapter?
Yeah, I think the opening, the boy drowning, is just amazing. Very gripping, very powerful, really quite brutal. I can't remember reading a book which opens with such a brutal, in-your-face chapter quite like that before. So it really grabbed my attention.
Yeah, I loved that as well. Very compelled by it. And as you say, brutal. It was very graphic. You could almost have been there. I did want to jump in and save him at several points. I felt very tense for him. It's very short, though. And then the ending was over that part of it. It's quite stark, I thought. Yes, I loved that. Definitely made me want to read more.
Do you feel that the rest of the book lived up to the incredibly compelling opening?
It's a difficult thing to do, to live up to a big, strong opening like that. And it's quite clever where the book goes from there, because there's something like 180 pages of very little dialogue and one person, which is a very brave thing, I think, for a writer to do. Not just a single point of view, but literally just one person wandering around sort of thing, not sure what's going on. And I guess it's the intrigue that keeps you going, because you don't know this boy at first. You don't know Seth at first. You know he's 17-year-old. You know he's dead. He's woken up in this kind of, is it an alternate universe? Is it an afterlife? We don't know. And we're just following him and trying to get to know him through his flashbacks, his dreams. So I suppose it's the intrigue that carries us on.
I liked the flashbacks. I lived for the flashbacks, I have to admit, during that opening. I actually marked how long that went on for. For me, it went on for too long, not knowing. I mean, he dies and then he's not dead. But the flashbacks were fantastic. I loved them. I sort of flicked through to see how far it was till the next one, because I did get uncomfortable. I felt it was just, for me, uncomfortable not knowing. I was just interminable.
I feel like that's been done on purpose. Like, the sort of suspense of not knowing is really built up very effectively through that sparse prose. Like, it's just like, you're like, give me something, give me anything to go on here. And then it almost enhances the flashbacks that Seth has, because obviously those happen when he falls asleep and they happen involuntarily. And so you're thrown into this like really, really rich memory that is very, very different to what you're experiencing in the rest of the book. I think the second flashback, I was already crying. I was like, oh God, this is so sad and moving. And you've barely experienced anything at all because of that sort of, disjuncture between the two.
Yeah, and I thought it was an incredibly clever piece of writing, that nothing much is happening in a sense, but so much is happening that I've got to read on. I found it technically really well done.
Me too. I think he's really grown as a writer. Like, I read the Chaos Walking trilogy a couple of years ago and I really enjoyed them. And, what's very singular about that book is the sort of tiny bitty chapters where everything finishes on a cliffhanger and you're like, oh my God, I must know what happens next, and you keep reading. And this was like a grown-up version of that, almost. I was almost surprised that it was a young adult book. It seems a bit older than the Chaos Walking audience.
I'm not older. I definitely think it's possibly a more challenging read. You just didn't quite get it at all,
did
you?
No, my daughter did, though. She read it when we were on holiday in Mexico last year, and she adored it. She absolutely loved it and forced it upon me. It made me feel uncomfortable not knowing what was going on. I like to know when I'm reading a book, I like to know where I am, what's happening, and then move on from there. This was the other way around.
This book is all about not knowing where you are, not knowing,
which makes me itchy,
why you are, not knowing how you are.
It's my control freak who needs to know stuff.
Something that I think really contributed to the sort of sparse style, as well as the short chapters and the cliffhangers and the things that Patrick Ness does very well, was the sort of lack of genre. It almost felt genreless for at least the first half of the book, even as some of the more traditional, because it does get a bit science fiction-y by the end of it, and you sort of understand what's going on. It still was like the language didn't match up with the action for me, and that definitely made me stop and think twice about what I was reading, specifically as well because the other book that I read was Chaos Walking, which is quite heavily science fiction future world.
Yeah, but he's still messing with genres. I don't think he'd be comfortable sort of sticking to one genre. He seems to be footloose and fancy free and doing what he likes within things. But it definitely a lone person in a world all by themselves. I mean, it does hark back to things like I Am Legend. And there's bits, as you say, bits sci-fi, bits of The Matrix thrown in this. Yeah. And there's a book by J.G. Ballard called Concrete Jungle, where a man gets trapped on a traffic island in the middle of London. And it's like a Robinson Crusoe on this traffic. And I felt there was bits of that thrown in there as well. Yeah. Somebody trapped in, you know, in an urban desert sprawl, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
I completely agree. I don't think it's really got a genre. But that's what's so great about YA, because if you're an adult writer and you write a horror book or a sci-fi book or a literary novel, you get put on a certain bookshelf in a library or a bookshop. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you write YA fiction or kids' books, you just get put on the YA shelf or the kids' shelf, and you can write any genre you want to write, and you're always going to be on that same shelf. I don't agree that YA is a genre. You know, I think it's more of a movement, perhaps, within literature, because it encompasses all. You get YA horror, YA literature, YA sci-fi, YA bromance, you know, it's all in there.
I think that's why I like it so much.
Patrick Ness, obviously, kind of, every book's different and broken its own ground.
I just think I thought the writing was absolutely incredible. It was brilliant to be able to sort of, that feeling of being there. Yeah, this was totally genreless for the beauty of the writing. It was just almost verging on literary at points, except it was still a story.
Oh, verging on, I think. I bet two great big welly boots stuck in literary for my money.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I think so too. I think what it was trying to do, it was a thriller. You know, there's some great action sequences in there when the faceless driver.
The driver, he was amazing.
Comes along, some fantastic action sequences and things like that, which really keep you flipping the pages. But I think what the book was trying to do was more than just tell the story, you know.
It was more than this. It was, absolutely.
It was trying to make you feel
uncomfortable.
It was trying to make you feel scared. It was trying to make you feel guilty. It was trying to make you feel envious. You know, all these emotions were layered in there. And I think that's what the best literary fiction does. It makes us feel the whole gamut of emotion.
While also sort of questioning the limits of that fiction itself. And I think one of the things that really stood out about More Than This is that I think that's probably the most heavy-handed part of it, actually. The references to, you know, oh, well, if this was a movie, this would happen. Like, there's a lot of meta sort of, like, what is the function of narrative?
Yeah.
And what would happen at this point in a story that then sometimes happens and sometimes doesn't. And it does make you sort of stop and take stock at several points, especially because of the sparseness of the prose, where you're like, wait a second, what are you trying to say here?
Because the book's all about, we all want more than this. And it could almost be a question, Matt. You know, is there more than this? Isn't there? Is this what we've got? And I think a lot of yearning, especially for young people, there's that yearning to have a more exciting life and to maybe have a life like a story they've read or a life like a Hollywood movie they've read. And is that the life they want? Do they want those plot twists in life? Do they want that kind of that climactic ending in a life? Is that what we really strive for? Do we really want those big Hollywood blockbuster or novelistic moments? And
or is it those small tender flashbacks that are the important things?
I got something completely. I don't know if I read a completely different book. I kind of got having two teenagers. The main character Seth kind of blamed a lot of the problems that he had in his life on other people. You know, his parents ignoring him. That's why he was so depressed. Other people's problems made his life miserable. But then by the end, he discovered that it was all about him. And a lot of teenagers, they're very lonely. They see that their problems are other people's problems. I don't know, probably because I have teenagers and this is what they're going through currently. The things that go wrong in their life are other people's fault. And by the end of it, I felt that he kind of discovered that it was up to him. It was not down to anybody else. And this was kind of a journey that he was going through to figure out that in order to be happy, it was up to him to do something about it and not to do with anybody else that he encountered or anybody else's problems or society's problems. Yeah. Or
I think I got a similar thing in the sense that, is there more than this? Yes, but
you've got to make it happen. It's up to you to do it.
But also realising that, you know, there are bigger things in the world than you. A lot of the sort of narrative with Seth is that he was like, oh, you know, my parents had all these problems with me, when actually his parents were dealing with, you know, their own grief, their own issues. And that was having an effect on Seth and their relationship with Seth, for sure. But it wasn't about him, it was about them. They were falling to pieces. You know, there's very early on something where his mum leaves the house. And he thinks that it's his fault that something happened, but actually she left her two children alone.
I felt very upset about that part.
At random, and he's sitting there blaming himself, and you're like, well, she's probably going through the exact same thing as you are, and that's why the two of you aren't able to speak. in terms of the book, obviously we've talked about some of the issues it deals with. It's a young adult book. It deals with some very, very tough themes throughout the plot. I mean, we have suicide, we have murder, we have child abuse. Do you think that young adult books should be censoring themselves with these sorts of issues? Or do you think they have a responsibility to tackle these issues for a young audience?
I definitely don't think they have a responsibility. I get a little bit annoyed when people claim that all books for young people should be character building or should be educational. Mm-hmm. Or should make you a better person or teach you things if you read them. You know, we all want to read for entertainment first and foremost, but entertainment doesn't have to be a dirty word. The best entertainment makes us think as well. And perhaps that's what this book is doing. You know, it's a cracking story. It's a big book, but you kind of, you do keep flipping those pages, and yet there's more to think about. You know, maybe that's what the best YA books do. You know, they feel simplistic because they're perhaps that little bit more accessible. And yet, well, the best YA is dealing with huge, huge issues. Mm-hmm. But it's doing it in a non-patronising, non-preachy, just an honest, truthful way with a great story.
Mm. And I think that's possibly got to do with the fact that the issue isn't at the forefront. It's not like this is a book about an issue. It's this is a story.
Well, it's definitely how YA's changed. Yeah. You know, I know when it was teen fiction, it was like, you know, an author would come up with an idea for an issue. Oh, I'm going to write a book about drug abuse. And then the whole book was centred around that one issue. But YA's got older. YA's grown up. It's matured. We've got better and better writers wanting to tackle big issues for young people in YA novels. And so that the novels have developed as well with the better writers coming along. And so story comes first, perhaps as it should, and then there's the issue underneath that.
And I think books are by far the best way for teens to experience these things, because when you read, you become the character, and it's just such a brilliant way to teach empathy, for them to learn empathy, to become a character within a book. You don't experience that when you're watching a movie. You're watching somebody else act something out. Mm-hmm. You don't experience it firsthand, whereas when you get into a book, you get so close to the situation in a safe way, and they should experience everything, all different lives, all mm-hmm. different incidents, things that they will never come across.
And actually, one of the most valuable things about this book, I think, is that for, I think, the first time in Patrick Ness's work, we have a protagonist, that the main character is gay. And even though it does cause some surrounding issues with his parents a bit, maybe, actually, for him, he's very secure in his sexuality and it's not a problem. And that is something he views as natural and normal. And the normalization of that relationship and putting
it's
that in like
in
so many
it's
people's
just,
views,
yeah.
Like, God, I think it's so valuable.
And it's great to see that that's just how it is. That's not, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a very human approach to characterization as well, because you don't get, it's not a stereotype at
no,
all.
No, not at all, not at all.
You know, I mean, this guy is really outdoorsy and he runs and he, you know, he's very self-sufficient and quite masculine, doesn't talk about his feelings, you know, lots of things that people would generally be like, please, that's not how you write a gay person. And just none of it.
Yeah.
It's fab. Mm-hmm. We've not really talked about the D word yet, but the book obviously deals with the idea of what might happen after death.
It seems to definitely die at the end of that first chapter. Head smashed against the rocks in the sea, definitely seems to be dead. And then he wakes up. But by the end of the book, I wondered if actually what had happened is that sometimes you just need to step out of your life and have a look at what your life mm-hmm. is. And, you know, step off the world, let it turn a little bit, you watching it, mm-hmm. and then step back on and pick things up from there. With this idea that perhaps the title can also be a question in my mind. And so for me, by the end of the book, that question was answered, because I didn't necessarily see this as an afterlife. The approach was very humanistic. You know, there was no mm-hmm. religion, there was no spirituality.
Of course, yeah.
Maybe the author's also been purposely kind of oblique.
When, as you go on, it turns out that maybe the first life where he died was not real life, and this was the real life. But then so much goes on in this that can't possibly be real life either. So I would say, I came to the same conclusion as you, is that dashing his head on the rocks was a step back and see what's important and see what it is about life that you know he was working through every issue that he had all the way through. And then the two people who came in, the Tomas and Regine, I thought, for me, they represented the people in his real life. He kept saying that Tomas was very much reminded him of his brother. And I felt, from my interpretation, was that they were all the people. The driver was his parents. They represented who had all the people that had caused him problems. And he had to work through with them what his issues were. And by the end, he had worked out what the problems were in his life, and he could go back and sort it all out.
It occurs to me now that, thinking about it, actually, it is sort of that traditional children's narrative plot, except for sort of turned on its head, because normally in a, you know, in children's literature you have somebody who arrives and takes the child away on an adventure of some kind where they leave their normal life and learn magical lessons, and then that person leaves and they've learned all these things and, you know, there's no place like home. And it is like that, but sort of in reverse. And so done much better.
So he doesn't die, he goes to a really messed up Oz.
I think the argument could be made that it's some sort of psychotic break as well, or, you know, a medical thing. You know, like, there's lots of options, but it is plausible, and I like that option is there, and that, like, all of the storylines, nothing's shut down as a like concrete ending,
yeah.
But they all make sense. It's not like you're clutching at straws here. Like, each could be a clear option for what happened.
Well, I'm talking about, it's not really about the story, is it? It's about the ideas within mm-hmm. the story.
Yeah.
It's about those ideas that we get when reading the book, I suppose. So in a weird way, the story by the end doesn't matter that much. It's the ideas we're left with.
It's very much a talking about book.
So even though you didn't like it very much, you're enjoying talking about it?
I only felt really uncomfortable in the first bit. I wish that was much shorter.
The idea of that sort of post-apocalyptic-y survival world really appeals to me. I'm not sure why, specifically, especially when it's linked to our world, because it is sort of positioned as like, this is a place that he knows, but it's totally burnt out. And that always scares the crap out of me. So I was just like, oh God, what would you do? Whenever I finish reading anything like that, I'm always like, right, I need to get a self-sufficiency handbook and move somewhere and build an eco house with solar panels and something so that, like, when the world ends, I am okay. Yes. Keith, you recently edited a selection of short stories about what happens after death.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask how you felt sort of approaching this, having worked with a bunch of authors, asking them, you know, to interpret their ideas of life after death and also your own.
It was really interesting. It was, the first anthology I did was about first sexual experience, and there was only one author that turned me down. Only one author said, no, I don't want to write about that. But then when I was asking people to write about, I made it clear, look, I'm not asking you to put forward your own personal beliefs. And I was turned down by several more authors who just didn't want to go into that territory, which I found really interesting.
So they'll talk about sex, but not death.
Yeah, yeah, or belief. What was interesting about the anthology is that most of the stories are actually about life. They're sort of stories of memory about what happens in your life affects what happens in your death, perhaps.
Mm.
And there was only one in the collection that was actually out and out religious thing, and that was really interesting as well, which again is sort of reflected in more than this, that it's a very humanist book.
Yeah.
It's not a particularly spiritual book in that sense. But I think it's a topic, death. Teenagers love it, sex and death. that's all they want to talk about, isn't it? Sex and death. So I think it's... you hit 12, 13, 14, and that's when you realise that you can die. That's when you sort of get that consciousness. You've never really had it. If you're lucky, you've never really had it, sort of thing, as you've been younger, that you could die or that people around you could die. Pets might die and people on TV get shot, do you know what I mean? But you see them in another movie. And it's maybe as a teenager that the real implications of what death is start to hit home. And so I think teenagers love exploring that and exploring their own beliefs and their own ideas.
Yeah.
And throw as many ideas and beliefs at them as possible. And, you know, one or two will stick for them personally, what works for them.
Yeah. And I guess even though this book isn't explicitly about life after death, it does explore the implications of what would happen if you were removed from the equation.
Yes, yeah.
And I do really like that about it. In a world where you would continue to be conscious afterwards and get to think, reflect on it.
Well, I know it deals with suicide, and a lot of teenagers I've spoken to about suicide, for them it's if they feel the need, unfortunately, to want to take their own lives. A lot of it is they don't always get their head around the fact that they won't be able to see people's reactions when they've gone, which is a very important message, perhaps, to put across to them, that when they're taken out of the equation, the world does still turn and people still do go and do their daily job. And
I guess that's where projects like It Gets Better are so important, because they give you some perspective on what could happen afterwards and how this is just a phase, well, not a phase, but, you know, like just a time that you are dealing with, and that, you know, the world will continue on.
Absolutely.
What hit me a lot from the book as well was that it covers a lot of different kinds of experiences and calls into question the validity of those experiences. And I think that having a gay protagonist for that is quite useful, actually, because it sort of takes you through the idea that experiences that may not have happened or that aren't classed as real or normal by society are still just as important as other, you know, large historical events that took place or something like that. And it really does root the importance of the book in those moments, whether they have happened or not. It's like, do you know what your feelings, your experiences, and they are valid regardless of the reality in which they might have taken place.
There's a quote actually from the book, and it says we take random events and we put them together in a pattern so we can comfort ourselves with a story, no matter how much of it is obviously isn't true. We have to lie to ourselves to live, otherwise we'd go crazy. You know, that saying that life is just about random stories that we put together. Sort of, we make it all up as we go along anyway.
All right, well, that's all we've got time for today, but the discussion doesn't have to end here. If anyone listening has thoughts or comments about more than this, you can add them on our Book Talk webpage at scottishbooktrust.com, on Twitter at scottishbktrust, or on our Facebook page as well. If you want to find out more about our guests, you can check them out online.
I have some online creative writing workshop videos, how-to creative writing workshop videos, on the Scottish Book Trust website, which some wannabe writers out there might really enjoy, some aspiring writers might enjoy looking at those. And please do read my books as well.
I'm on Twitter all the time, Eve Harvey on Twitter. You can find me there. I do have a website, but it's got nothing on it apart from my face, so find me on Twitter.
Book Talk will be back in a couple of weeks, and we'll have interviews and news from your favourite authors, and we'll actually be featuring a special interview with none other than Patrick Ness himself, so that'll be pretty good. Thanks so much to our guests today, Keith and Eve, and thanks for listening, and happy reading.